So, welcome everybody. Thanks again for joining us today. This afternoon, we have a really fun and exciting episode for you. We're going to be talking with Dr. Josh McLaughlin. He is, sorry, Josh has a doctorate degree in clinical psychology, a master's degree in divinity, and provides healing and guidance to persons of all ages. At his practice in Candler, North Carolina, he combines his expertise in the fields of psychology and spirituality with a strong intuitive sense to enhance a person's capacity for true freedom. And a little background in terms of my connection with Josh. I met him at the North Carolina Freedom Fest, and he and his wife invited me and my family to come stay with them and check out the property at a school that they're involved in Western North Carolina. It's a really beautiful place. They literally own the top of a mountain. I'm super jealous of that. And he also told me an incredible story of a person that a person that he saw or treats or treated. And that was the real reason I wanted to bring him on the show and talk to him more about that, because this is a huge issue that we're facing now, these mRNA vaccines. What are the implications? What are the long-term ramifications for this, both on the physical body, but what we're going to find out is there could be a really big impact on the spiritual body as well. And so with that, I'd like to welcome Dr. Josh McLaughlin to the show, and thank you for joining us.
Yeah, I really appreciate being here.
Great. So I think the first place to start is maybe if you could give us a little bit of a background on what you do in your practice, the type of people that you see, and then we can transition to that particular story and the mRNA vaccines.
Yeah, I think. My training is in the field of psychology. And so, on the surface, what I do looks a lot like any other mental health practitioner. I work relationally, helping people to develop. So, we build this relationship, and within that relational framework, we help people to develop the capacity to observe what's going on inside their inner world. And because the stronger that observer is, the more control or influence they will have over their own inner world, their sensations, their drives, their memories, their emotions, their thoughts. The more that you can observe what's happening without getting sucked into it, then you have the capacity to guide it more effectively. Which, and I'll talk more about Rudolf Steiner and his understanding of the human person, but from Steiner's perspective, that's this soul capacity, that's getting up into the consciousness soul, that ability to see what it is that you want out of life, what is true and good and beautiful, and guide yourself in that direction. And so I think someone who sits with me could experience me as a depthful psychotherapist, right? I think from my perspective, where I sit, I have a strong emphasis on building the soul, building the capacity of the soul to choose a type of life that is out of freedom, that ability to freely choose one's own life, and ideally to choose a light that is filled with light, a life that is woven with the divine. And so I'm in the process right now of shifting my work to away from the perception of being in the field of psychology and focused entirely on the soul work. That really what I'm doing is healing and guiding the development of the soul with the people who want to come and work with me. And that's been an important clarification and shift for me, that that's really the work that I do. I think it's also worth noting that I also have an energetic work that I do with clients. And for you know, in this type of work, it's about tuning into the different bodies, spiritual or subtle bodies that surround the physical. So whether that's the etheric, the astral, the soul, the spirit body. And I use the terms based on Rudolf Steiner's work. But working with those energetically to support the work that we do verbally and relationally. So it ends up being a really powerful and effective, I guess you could call it healing, you know, development enhancement.
Could you describe a little bit of these bodies that you're talking about for maybe for people who aren't familiar with Rudolf Steiner's work? And then how you work on them, or how you see the issues that people are having.
Right. Yeah. It's so for Rudolf Steiner, you know, he starts out, there's the physical body, which is the mineral, right? It's what you imagine the physical body to be. Then immediately surrounding that is the etheric, which is the life body or the vitality body. And every part of the physical body has an etheric counterpart. So there's an etheric heart, an etheric lung, an etheric thigh. You know, it's the it's what brings life to the mineral, to the physical. And then surrounding that is the astral. And the astral is the memories, the emotions, the thoughts that just come and ramble through. It's the inclinations, the preferences. All of these reside in that field that surrounds the body. And Steiner referred to these as the three lower bodies. And then from there, and I should also say, for those who are really familiar with anthroposophy, I do have a little bit of my own twist to this. So, but surrounding those three lower bodies, you have the next one is the soul body. And the soul is the observer. It's the one who's able to see what's going on. And we develop that capacity first to observe what's happening in the physical and the sensations, observe what's happening in the thoughts and the emotions and the memories, and then observe what's going on in the world around and where we want to go with this, where we want to take our life and everything that's stirring in these lower bodies. And so ultimately, well, then the last body is the spirit body. And that is the unique image of the divine within each of us. It is that which is hidden beneath all things. You know, it is our own unique ray of the creator, of Christ, of whatever you would call it, source. And the role of the soul, when it is fully developed or in that process of developing, is to consciously and freely weave the divine into the lower bodies, into the astral, in the sense of weaving it into your thoughts, into your emotions, into your memories. Weave it into the etheric, into your energy, into your vitality, and ultimately down into the physical. You know, there is, of course, many accounts of great holy people whose bodies are incorruptible at death. You know, these are people who have woven the divine, the sacredness of life, the light of life into their physical, and illuminated it, transfigured it. And so that's my overview of how I would describe Steiner's bodies. And it's what's significant is that, you know, when we get to telling the story about this woman that I was working with, is being able to understand how these bodies work really gives us a clue as to what this injection or this vaccine is actually doing in these higher bodies. So,
great. And so can you walk us through like the actual mechanics of how you work with these people? Do you call it, are they patients?
They're people.
How do you work with these people you know, how do you get in touch or, you know, work with them on these different levels?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, there are some who come to me who aren't as open to doing this. And so it's something that I do more privately, but there's also those who want to engage the process with me. But it's, I think the best way to describe it is it's an imaginative place, I guess. I don't know. It's hard. It's a hard thing to describe, but there is a perception of sorts of these different bodies that I can see as I'm working with someone. And so what I'm attempting to do is a prayerful exercise of asking the divine to work through me. And I'm working with what I refer to as the light of Christ, or the light of the divine, the light of life, and illuminating these different bodies. And occasionally there are blockages, occasionally there are darker energies that reside in the bodies, things that keep the energy from moving or expanding. And it's about inviting that light to come into these areas that are stuck or blocked or distorted, and freeing them up to function more freely. I get what I said, to help them to function more effectively, with a clear mind, with clear emotions, with clear energy. There's nothing that is stopping the, this is where words start to get difficult. Where the light is able to flow freely through those bodies. So it's a little abstract, but that's how I do it.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it's very interesting. And I remember, I think my dad was saying how, like, this light that you're talking about, like, it's an actual thing. Like, there's, I think the cells in our body literally create light. And so it's like this is an actual thing here, there's so much that mainstream science or biology just doesn't understand. It doesn't do an adequate job of describing. And so I think this type of knowledge that you have is something that is probably available to people at certain times, but it's almost lost these days.
We have to be careful of the language we use. When we say it's a real thing, it's because we are so much living in a five sense world. Everything that we function with in our modern society and in the way in which we talk to each other is that it's only real if we can see, taste, touch, hear, smell. And so we create a framework around reality. And of course, you can look at the just the light spectrum alone and say, well, there's so much more that even our senses can't perceive. And so there's electromagnetic frequencies that we know are there, we can measure, but we need special instruments to do so. We live in a world that's far more dynamic than what our five senses have the capacity to engage with. But we've been trained to say it's real if we can put it in this box. Anything that we can't put in the box, well, it's a little bit more speculative.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You put it much more eloquently than I did. Mm-hmm. So could you talk to us about the experience that you had with the person that you saw and her experience with the mRNA vaccine?
Yeah, so I had already been clued in that this vaccine, what I think moving forward call an injection, because that's a little bit more accurate, with this injection, that it was going to have problems on the spiritual bodies, on the subtle bodies. And I think there was enough research that all of us who were looking knew that it was going to be problematic physically. There was a few instances that I had leading up to this experience with this particular person that led me to believe that this is going to be a big problem. And I kept coming back to that that prediction that Rudolf Steiner made over 100 years ago when he said, one day the materialists will be so sophisticated that they will come up with this vaccine that will drive all inclination towards spirituality out of people's souls. And I had that sort of ringing in the back of my mind as I started to encounter different people I was working with who were receiving this injection. And so this particular woman had a very, very serious trauma history, one of the worst I've ever heard. And she came into me to see me and having night terrors, insomnia, depression, substance use, hopelessness, despair, a recent, very serious suicide attempt, lots of things going on. And I began my work with her and was beginning to see progress when she received the first injection. And when I tuned in with her energetically, what I saw was that the soul body, which again is that observer, was pulled aside from the lower bodies. It wasn't embedded where it typically is. It was pulled aside. And it was wrapped, and again, I'm gonna use the images that I see. I think other people who do this type of work may see it a little different, but I'll just give you what I see. So the soul was wrapped in these heavy chains, and the soul itself was asleep and impotent and pale and weak and pulled aside from the rest of the body. And the spirit body was up above, and it was wrapped in this cocoon, and it covered up entirely in this cocoon, and there was this dark entity sitting on top of it, pulling life out of it. And so we may have lost some of your listeners on that one, but but the work that I did from there, of course I was shocked trying to figure out, okay, why is the spirit body pulled aside? Why is it wrapped in chains? What the hell's going on with the spirit body? And, but at the time I'm just gonna work and do what I know to do and to fill these things with light. And so working for a good amount of time to remove the chains, restore the soul, remove the entity, unwrap the cocoon and bring this, enliven it, because under the cocoon, it was just ravaged. It was that's what it appeared to me, to be very ravaged. And so re-enlivening it and weaving it back into the person that I was working with, into the astral, into the etheric, into the physical. And so I had that experience, but what was striking to me is I perceived that, but she had reported no difference in her functioning for the first injection. And so I thought to myself, well, I'm not gonna jump to any conclusions. This was an unusual thing to perceive, but you know, I still need to sit, this is just data at this point, I'm just making notes. And so I proceeded to try to convince her over the next several weeks, don't get this second injection. And I gave her all the rational scientific reasons for why it would not be wise to do so. And she elected to do so for her own reasons. And when she received the second injection, I was blocked from her energetically. It was almost like it all went dark. I couldn't see anything. And so I went through, that happened, and then I saw her again and was still blocked. And it was during that second visit that she started to report changes in her psychological functioning that were really striking to me. And she said to me, the night terrors are back, the insomnia is back, the despair and the depression, the hopelessness, all the self-hatred, that's all back in full force. And she said, and the strangest thing is happening. I can't observe my thoughts anymore. She said, I used to in the mornings would meditate, and it was almost as if I could just sit there and watch all the thoughts that were going on and observe them at a distance, as if I were in hiding, just watching them. She said, but now there's no distinction. I can't get out of them. And she said, everything, and these are her exact words, everything is so sharp, metallic, like crushing a can. And in that moment, I was so overwhelmed by this is what's happening in her astral, in her psychological, that the observer, the soul, is so removed that all that is left is this metallic, mechanistic chaos. And so in the room, in that moment, I felt myself become very intentional with the energy that I had with me and what I was doing. And as she left, I worked for a long time. And again, what I saw was the spirit pulled aside, wrapped in the, or sorry, the soul pulled aside, wrapped in chains, the spirit body wrapped in the cocoon. But that entity, that dark presence that I saw was not there, but was in the astral field, acting as this sort of puppet master with the emotions, with the thoughts, with the memories, right? And so it's just about bringing that light of life, that light of the divine into those areas, into that entity, into the energies that are there, and cleaning it all up, weaving it back together. And the next time I saw her a few days later, her thoughts are cleared. She's sleeping again. The night terrors are gone. And so, and her, it was one of the best weekends she had had in a long time. So, wow. So that was more confirmation for me. It was more data that I was collecting that about what this injection is doing in these subtle bodies. You know, it's very, there's lots of elaborate images for me, but I think there's a lot of things that we can say that we can learn from what I saw and what I was doing there. And so, but I'll pause there because I've been talking for a little while. So.
Your services may be in very high demand here going forward as more and more people, you know, take the jab and you know, are in need of this healing, which it sounds to me, based on my understanding and also your story, is really complicated, right? It's outside of what we normally think of as healing. Mm-hmm. even though I've discovered in my life, for me, all healing is kind of in the spiritual realm, and then it plays out on the physical. But this is something that's, you know it's not going to be some sort of, you know, detox or cleanse, right? We're talking some sort of technology that's designed to do something at the soul level, or to, you know, cut off our connection, or cut ourselves off from ourselves or from God. And, you know, for me, that's always been what this is about. So it's so interesting to hear confirmation of that, you know, from somebody who's working with people on that level. Is this something that you've experienced now just once with her? I'm sure you have other patients who have taken the jab, or is this a one-off that you've experienced so far? Have you had other dealings with folks that are vaxxed, or what are your thoughts there?
Yeah. So in the other people that I've been working with, who've received this injection, when I'm able to access these bodies, it's the same type of perception in terms of what's going on with the soul and the chains, the spirit body, and this darker energy. But what's interesting is every person's different in terms of their openness to me. And, you know, there was a man in his 30s that I was working with who had received it. And there was several visits, probably four visits or so, where I wasn't able to work on him. And it wasn't until in the middle of one of our conversations where I was able, something that I had said inspired him in a way that he had almost forgotten, is the way it felt. I said something and he paused and he said, that's just really inspiring to me. And he suddenly started to talk very differently than he had been talking over that past month about the type of man he wanted to be and the type of, life he had been striving to live that he somehow had forgotten, and began to make this promise toward life. And it was as he was shifting in this way that suddenly that all opened back up to me energetically. And I was able to bring that light into his world, into his person. And so there has to be some type of an awareness to create an opening. At least that's been my experience thus far, for me to be able to do that work.
And for the, so for all the folks that you've seen that have taken the jab, they're dealing with this on those levels.
Yeah. And there are some who just don't open to me and they stop coming for some reason, you know?
Yeah. I mean, and that may be the whole, you know, free will component and people needing to, you know, in free will, make that choice to receive that help that you can offer.
Yeah. My sense of it is that it's how developed the soul is beforehand. You know, if the person is doing work to know themselves, to know what's going on in the inner world, to pursue what is true, good, and beautiful in life, if they are actively doing that maturation process prior to the injection, then there's more opening post-injection for healing. Because I think it's those souls who are already asleep and immature and underdeveloped that are easy prey to this type of, to the injection, to the technology, to the influence, the energy that it brings, because they lack the perception. But I think for those who are doing the work, they may get pressured in one way or another to receive it, but they still aren't completely lost at that point. There's still an opening for them to receive that healing.
The imagery you describe, I mean, it's almost with the dark entity sucking out energy from this being. I mean, that brings back the movie The Matrix, of when people are like literally hooked up to this battery. And combine that with the metallic, you know, all I feel or see is this sharp metallic stuff. I mean, that could be the nanoparticles and other stuff that's in these injections. I mean, could you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, so I have a lot of thoughts about what's actually in the injection. Mm-hmm. And I'll share my thoughts, but I'll preface them with, this is way outside of my field. Mm-hmm. And so I'm a man who is reading, researching, reflecting, intuiting, and praying. And so I think to begin this conversation, it's important to be clear about what these companies are actually saying is in their injection. Because I think it's an important contrast. Everyone who's listening to this has heard this, so I'll go briefly, you know, but what they say is the way the whole genetic sequence works is it works just like a machine or a computer. The DNA has the code. It sends out a signal, which is the mRNA, that carries that information into the cytoplasm or the water, which hits the ribosomes, which is the factory, which spits out the proteins, which are the workers that go off and do the work, right? So everything is very machine, computer-oriented in their framework. And so what they say this mRNA vaccine is that it's a synthetic signal. It's a synthetic mRNA that wraps up this signal in a lipid package, right? So that way it can act as a Trojan horse in the body. It can come in there and not get rejected. The signal then, the technology that has the signal gets into the cell, doesn't go into the nucleus. It gets into the cytoplasm and delivers its information to the ribosomes, which are fooled into hearing that, oh, this is the same as what comes from the DNA. They make, they kick into gear and they make the protein based on the information they receive from the synthetic mRNA, and they spit it out. And it's these more harmless spike proteins, right? That the body immediately recognizes, says, hey, you're not supposed to be here. but they're fairly harmless. So it's an easy immune system response. Body gets trained, learns, and it's ready for the real thing, right? If it were to ever be exposed. So that's what they're saying, right? But when we start to ask, well, what's really going on? We have to question the whole thing, not just what's in the injection, but how does the cell actually work, right? What is the DNA? Is it a code? What is the cytoplasm? Is it the house of the factory, you know? So my sense, well, I think the work of Luc Montagnier, I may be mispronouncing that, but the French virologist who won the Nobel Prize in Physiology and Medicine in 2008. In 2010, released some studies on DNA, and I won't get into them all. There's great videos online to describe them. But one of the things he started to show was how DNA is this emitter and receiver of frequency. And so I'll briefly describe one of the experiments. So he has this beaker of water, puts bacterial DNA in it, and then measures the electromagnetic frequency that is emitted from this water with DNA, right? And the water had no frequency before the DNA got there. The DNA comes in, it has this frequency that can be measured like a low radio wave. And then he takes this and strains out the DNA, so there's nothing left but purified water, and it still is holding the frequency, even without the DNA there. Mm-hmm. And then he puts that beaker of water into this box that blocks other frequencies, puts another beaker of water next to it, surrounds the whole thing with the Schumann resonance, and waits. And after about 18 hours, pulls them out, and both beakers of water carrying the same electromagnetic frequency. And then he goes further, he takes that second beaker and puts in nucleotides and the other building blocks of DNA and waits. And DNA forms, and it is 98% identical to the original DNA that was strained out.
Wow.
And so what do we learn from this? Well, I don't know all the implications because that's not my field, but the thing that strikes me is that DNA holds a frequency, or perhaps even is a frequency, more than a particle. It's a frequency that gets imprinted in the water that surrounds it, the cytoplasm, and that water then holds that information in order to create more life out of it. Life emerges from the water, which is holding the frequency of the DNA. And so in my own world, for me, the way I translate all this is that DNA is, above all else, light. It's light, and it emits a light frequency that hits the water and life emerges out of it in a miraculous way, not in a mechanistic way. And so if that's at all close to right, what is... I guess I should pause. Do you all want to say anything to that?
No. This is great. Please.
The only thing that I would say is a lot of this stuff is, you know, my dad would agree with a lot of this stuff, like water holding information and literally having a memory. You know, he's done interviews with people who have, they take this like petri dish of water and then they talk to it like, show me a picture of falling down or, you know, falling down. And then the water literally freezes in the shape of, there's like a picture of London Bridge. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that to me is just incredible. Like London Bridge is falling down. Like the fact that water would has the intelligence, the memory, the whatever that is, it's incredible. It's beyond what we currently understand. And there's so much more going on to the story of biology and, you know, this, what I would call intelligent design than we can imagine right now.
Yeah. Yeah, and I should say even further that my sense is not only is the DNA light, but it is the physical footprint of the light of life, of the divine, of the light of Christ. So it is, you know, that is an access point for the divine to create life, for life to emerge. And I think that's important because of what this injection is. So in my mind, what this injection is a frequency. That's what it is at the core. And so it's this, again, man, I think it's helpful to pause and just reflect on the absolutely unimaginable scale in which we are talking about. When we talk about nanomedicine or nanotechnology, you know, the size of nano, if a cell is a football field, a nanoparticle is a football sitting at the 50-yard line. That's how small this is. But this has become this is becoming more and more prominent in the field of medicine. I mean, cancer treatment, there's at least 10 treatments that are currently being used that are nano-based. You know, they are working in laboratories right now. I mean, there are studies that you can look at and read where they're taking taking bits of genetic material, wrapping them in nano-sized particles, injecting them, and altering DNA, altering all sorts of things. I think it's amazingly miraculous what they're doing. It's really, frankly, difficult to imagine, but that's the scale. And so they take this thing, right? This nano technology, it gets into the body, it fools the body, makes it all the way to the water in the cell, and then emits a frequency, which imprints the water. And not only is it imprinting the water, but it's distorting. I want to be clear, this is speculative at this point, very much so. But this is what I believe at this point, is that it's distorting the DNA, the frequency from the DNA, and masking it. You know, you think about what I saw in my work. I saw the spirit body wrapped in a cocoon with a dark energy on top of it. And when it was done taking the life from it, it moved on into the psychology of the person, right? That's what I believe is happening, is that there is this technology that is frequency-based, that's able to receive and emit frequencies in the water of the cell that cuts it off from the frequency of the DNA, that cuts it off from the frequency of life, and instead replaces it with a mechanistic frequency that is ultimately informed and controlled by something on the outside, something that has, in my opinion, malicious intent.
This is the transhumanist, you know, sort of agenda and, you know, whatever you want to call that. But that this is like what you're describing. They're turning us away from being this, you know, light, water and light based beings into mechanical, machine, metallic based beings. Mm-hmm. And you know, to be controlled and manipulated, and who knows what they're able to do with, you know, putting out frequencies and you know, how are those gonna react to the stuff that they have in their bodies now?
Yes.
I mean, I know we're speculating here, but do you have any thoughts on that?
I think, I mean, yes, that's my thought of what's happening, is that the goal behind all of this is, just as Rudolf Steiner said, is to drive all inclination towards spirituality out of the soul. And I think we can go even farther than that, is to cut the human being off from the divine, so that the whatever is left is not something that's in the image of God anymore. It's in the image of a machine. And so it is a radical transformation of what it means to be human. it's quite possible, and you know, that if left alone for a certain period of time, if the soul is not restored, if the spirit body is not revived, that that person will ultimately be 100% connected into this frequency that is cold, metallic, like crushing a can. It's this frequency that is dark, that is, you know, using anthroposophical language, is aromonic. And so that's, I think that is ultimately the goal here. And yeah, so that's what I'm seeing energetically. That's what I'm speculating in terms of what is this injection. And I think it's also worth wondering, you know, if I were listening to this and being really skeptical, I would say, but there's no way they could have the technology that could receive and emit frequency at will, you know, that small within the cell. But of course, if you publicly, that technology is available. You know, if you look at the research on hydrogels, there's a company, the name of the company is slipping me. I think it's Profusa or something like that, but it's, they create a hydrogel and they market it for like something like diabetes. And their advertising is really compelling. You know, you inject this really, really small, impossibly small thing into your arm, right? It's able to read your insulin levels and other physiological data. It's able to gather that data and transmit that data back up to a smart device via light. It emits light frequency, which the smart device reads. The smart device is able to say, oh, my insulin is this much, needs to change, beep, beep, sends the frequency back, the hydrogel responds, and the insulin balances back out. That technology is out there. You know, they refer to, in the field of nanomedicine, it's been a huge breakthrough to be able to use these hydrogels, which, as a side note, many of them are magnetic. These hydrogels to wrap the pharmaceutical in. So for instance, a chemotherapy, say you wanted a chemotherapy to get to a specific tumor. Well, you wrap it in this hydrogel and it becomes what they call a smart delivery system. And what that means is that the pharmaceutical can stay wrapped up and protected until they're ready to release it. And when they're ready to release it, they can release it through electromagnetic signaling and say, now's the time, bam. And the pharmaceutical is released into the tumor to attack that cell, right? Is it really that much of a stretch to say that they have something like that that can release a frequency into the water of the cell? No, it's not. And we're only talking about what's public knowledge right now.
So. When you were, first of all, what a remarkable prophecy by Rudolf Steiner. When you were telling that, also equally remarkable story about the water and the and the, you know, the how they can take on each other's frequency or code in that way, and the whole story. First of all of this is very confirming. It's very confirmational to me as to, you know, my research and what I understand to be going on. But the thing that came to mind is this idea that's out there, and it's probably really not the correct term to be using, but the idea that's out there of shedding, you know, that this phenomenon that's going on where women especially are unvaccinated, spending time around vaccinated people, and then having all kinds of issues, a lot of them to do with menstrual things and childbirth and nursing and these sorts of things. And you know, I connected that into this person who I listen to, who calls, very similar to what you're describing here, calls the vaccine essentially at its core a rogue signal that's being injected into the body to do exactly what we're talking about, to, you know, cut you off from source, to cut you off from the higher realms, from God, if you will. And when you were talking about the water experiment and how that works, in my mind, I really connect that into, well, if we have this signal basically that's emitting, or we have this sort of, you know, frequency that jabs people are putting out, and then we have human energy fields interacting with one another, it doesn't seem like a stretch for one energy field, as the water did, to receive that signal from the other, and then show some of those signs. I wonder if that's an explanation for that phenomenon that's taking place.
That's my explanation. I think it's, you know, to postulate that there are stray spike proteins floating around in the air that have been shedded off a vaccinated or an injected person is as fantastical as saying that there is a virus called COVID that's floating through the air that you might breathe in. So I think my sense is that that what is happening here isn't on an energetic plane. It's on if you have to think about it in terms of frequency, not particle.
Yeah.
That, there is a dark metallic mechanistic frequency being emitted from the core of these people. And we know that frequencies from one person can be read and impact another. You sit in a room with someone who's crying, you will be impacted, right? This is what empathy is. You know, you can pick up on people's emotional states. You can pick up on people's cognitive states. You can pick up on their energetic states. When someone's excited, when they have a lot of energy, or when they're flat, you feel it. You don't have to think it, you just feel it. It's energy being transferred. Well, if there is a mechanistic frequency of, you know, however we want to describe this, that gets emitted from someone, it will impact you. And the question is, do you have a frequency that you emit that is stronger or more or able to withstand the frequency that's coming at you? You know, and I think that's where we start to get into this conversation about the future of medicine, the future of health, is what do we do in a world where this type of frequency we are being bathed in it so much of the time, you know, because more and more people are receiving this injection. And also, I think it's very much worth noting that we would be naive to think that if I'm even close to right, which I may not be, but if I'm even close to right, that this technology that they're putting in this injection, that they aren't also putting in other areas of life, that they aren't also putting in water treatment, that they are in chemtrails, in personal care products, in, you know, in
the food items and
pesticides and herbicides that they spray on foods. There's so many ways in which they could access our bodies. An injection, of course, is the most direct and most powerful, but my sense is that this is a type of frequency that is going to become ubiquitous. And so avoiding may not be a sustainable option in the near future.
Yeah, so talk about what medicine looks like if we're constantly subjected to these frequencies, where, you know, being around these people, because, you know, at some point we can't avoid it unless we're gonna, you know, go live off somewhere in the woods, which may not be the worst idea.
It may not be the worst, but
So like, what does the future of medicine look like if we're dealing with illnesses, diseases that are more on the spiritual, energetic level than on the physical level?
Yes. This, as a qualifier, this whole conversation is speculative, but if we're following the logic, if we're following this, if it makes sense to us intuitively at this point, we have to ask this question about what next, because even though we have been coming up with remedies and treatments for centuries and centuries and centuries as human beings, never before has the human being faced a a technology that is embedded within its own water, that is emitting a foreign frequency, that is cutting itself off from the divine, that is cutting the person off from the divine. That is unprecedented. And, you know, we can talk about, you know, and if I'm right that this is something that is going to be more and more ubiquitous, prevention is going to become unsustainable as an approach. And it's also possible that a detoxification approach, while helpful, I mean, I don't want to rule that out, and I'm certainly not giving medical advice, I'm just talking ideas at this point. Detoxification, such as saunas and fasting and juicing and coffee enemas and whatever else you might want to say, these may be helpful on some level. But again, if this is a frequency that continues to irradiate us, you know, then even that will be unsustainable at some point as an approach. And so in my mind, medicine has to completely reimagine itself from a substance that we take to an energy that we bathe ourselves in. And to, it has to be viewed in terms of frequency. And so the metaphor that I use and that I'm using right now as I think about this is the transfiguration of Christ. So Christ, there's this story in the Christian gospel of Jesus going up on the mountain with Peter and John. And while he's up there, he suddenly is bathed in light, in this brighter than the sun. They can't even look at him. And in the midst of this, there's Moses, there's Elijah beside him. And the Father says to him, "This is my son, listen to him." And then as Jesus comes down from the mountain from this experience, he's encountered by a group of people. And it says, upon seeing him, they are in awe. You know, there is something that happens to him physically, etherically, and the astral soul level, that he is woven in the light of the divine, in the light of the Father, light of creator, of source, light, life, whatever you want to say. He's woven in that to the point where they can't even look at him, you know. And I think, and he's not the same, right? He's not the same after that. And I think that is a metaphor for what medicine will be moving forward. It has to be a transfiguration, right? We have to be able to emit a frequency that transforms the technology, that it transforms the frequencies that are coming at us. You know, it's so, for instance, you know, instead of the 5G satellite or the antenna or router or nano signal, nanotechnology emitting these signals, instead of these being these enemies, these dark energies that are coming at us, we transfigure them with light to be the source of the divine for us. You know, just as they are able to emit a frequency that can cloud the frequency of life, we can tune into that frequency of life and emit a frequency back that transforms them, that transfigures them. And if we have that frequency within us, if we hold our communities in that frequency, if we hold our land in that frequency, our gardens in that frequency, then the frequency that wishes to turn humanity into machine, that wishes to cut humanity and all of creation off from the divine, off from the source of life, you know, it will be unsuccessful.
So what are the things that we could do in our own lives to, you know, work on our energy, work on our spirituality, you know, create this energy field that will hopefully be more powerful than what we're being subjected to?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I will get to the practicals, but before I say that, I want to say one thing, is that humanity is splitting right now. Mm-hmm. And that there are there are those who are going to pursue the path of machine, right? And that they will follow that path wherever it may lead them, you know? And then, but there's always a balance, right? Darkness is never bigger than the light. So as the world gets darker and this energy, this frequency of this harmonic frequency fills the earth, right? It creates an opening for light to grow, right? In those who pursue it. And so there will be those who are not only preserving what it means to be human, but amplifying, illuminating, transfiguring what it means to be human, taking it to another level. And so I think there is hope in the sense that many of us will be able to hold this for ourselves, for our children, for our families, for our communities, for our land, for our animals, for our trees, you know, et cetera. And so, and it is time to be serious for that to occur, right? If you are going to do that work, it requires a level of seriousness. So there's no fear here, but there is a call to a serious action, right? And I think the serious action looks like developing your soul and amplifying, weaving your spirit body into your life. And so what does that mean practically? Well, the soul, you know, you surround yourself in beauty. You surround yourself in love and affection. You know, when you are with someone, you hold their hand intentionally. You look them in the eye. You hold them with presence. You surround yourself in beautiful music. You surround yourself with clean, structured, oxygen-rich waters that are from springs, if you can, you know. You surround yourself in nourishing food that was grown lovingly. These are the type of things that nourish the soul, that wake it up. You reflect on your life. You think, you pray, you sit in silence. Because as your soul is stronger, then you are able to pursue light, pursue truth, pursue beauty, pursue goodness. And that is what light is, you know, at its core. And so, you know, it's doing the work of prayer, fasting, silence, simplicity. It's doing the work of, you know, as you make love with your partner, you do so in a way that builds the light and the love and the intimacy between you. You know, it's cooking with fire. It's, you know, lighting a candle. You know, it's so many simple things that can connect us and bathe us in light and open us up to reception of that light. And yet these are the things that in our current culture, we are constantly distracted from and cut off from, right? We have artificial lights, not fire. You know, we have pornography, not true intimacy that builds light within both. You know, you have mobile phones instead of holding hands. You have fast food stores instead of gardens. You know, we live in suburbs, not woods. You know, there's just so many things that that want to cut us off from the source of light. This, what is happening now is simply part of that train that has been launched for years and years, decades, centuries, you know, to cut us off from the divine. And it's only going to continue, you know. It's only going to push us more and more forcefully away from the divine. And that's where the seriousness comes into play, is that we really have to do the spiritual work, because that is medicine. And that is the survival of humanity, is that we are of true humanity, yep. Humanity in the image of the creator, you know, is that we are able to do this work. And so I'm not ruling out herbal medicine, acupuncture, all this sort of stuff. I believe that the future of medicine is going to require a level of spiritual engagement. for life to be sustainable?
It's the next step in our evolution, isn't it? It's interesting. It feels very much like a test that pushes us towards that next step of our evolution, which is really understanding our energy bodies and maintaining our frequency at a certain level, because without that, we're in trouble right now. So it's kind of like, it's really a push in that direction. Your words are so powerful. The work that you've come to do on this planet is amazing. And thank you for doing it and being here. It's really needed, obviously. And it's very encouraging to me to talk to someone who has solutions that are on this level, both for those of us on the path and even potentially for people who have made decisions that I would disagree with. I love that. And me and Asher, I've been saying that in our show repeatedly, like, these solutions are going to come to the forefront. There's going to be people who came here to help people, you know, who are in this situation, and to actually be talking to someone who, from my perspective, you've got the goods, you know, you really do. You have a presence, and like, it, you know, you are pulling this in from beautiful places and sharing it. And that's very obvious to me. So it seems like a call. You know, you talked about, I think you used a different word, but you know, you're talking about sort of, you know, transmuting or transmutation of, you know, this sort of signal or this frequency. And it's really calling on people at this point to step up and be alchemists, you know, to sign up, be that master alchemist. And I think in the evolution of humanity, we're kind of headed towards that less dense, more frequency based sort of reality, even bodies potentially, right? Depending on your perspective on this. So there's, you know, not really a question in there, but those things came to mind. And again, I just really want to recognize what you're doing and say that it's an absolute honor for me and a pleasure to listen to you talk about this stuff. I think you're spot on.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I wanted to make a comment as well. Sorry, my lighting is. But so me and Jesse in our podcasts are, you know, we sort of maintain a sense of optimism, and you know, we're both living, you know, what I would call great, happy lives, and we have a lot of love in our life. You know, we both have families, and we're doing well and having a great time. And it's hard for me to articulate exactly why I'm optimistic given what appears to be going on in the three-dimensional world. But then we're hearing from you, and you know, there's probably other people that are doing similar work, but like actually going into these energy fields with the people that you're seeing and really actually helping someone out like this. And maybe she is, you know, the person that you saw, maybe she's going to be okay and going to be able to make that, you know, spiritual ascension that is, I think, happening right now. And if we're able to really work on our soul and our spirituality and energy, then, you know, we could build up our own field so strong that whatever they're doing out there isn't going to affect us. And so it's like, I feel optimism. And before really talking to you, it was like, it's hard to put a, you know, it's hard to articulate it, but it's like seeing what you're doing, seeing what other people are doing, seeing the push to really, you know, there is that split that we, you know, that you talked about, and we've talked about it in past episodes as well. But there's a push. There's a lot of people going in the, what I would call the right direction. And, you know, I think you did a really good job of articulating why there's a reason to be optimistic and to be, you know, hopeful for the future. You know, it's people like you doing what you're doing and other people doing, you know, other things in different fields that are, you know, going to drive the world, drive, you know, help us maintain our humanity.
One thing I want to say about optimism and hope is that there is reason to be optimistic and hopeful, right? Because the richness that we are going to be capable of experiencing will be far beyond, this is me speculating, but will be far beyond what we currently imagine as possible. And I think there's also reason to be very clear-eyed about what's to come. You know, we are still at the beginning of this. And, you know, if I'm at all right or close to right that what this technology is that's being injected is that it is this technology that can emit, receive and emit frequency. It is not a stretch for me to think that they can dial up that frequency in a way that can do tremendous damage. And I think that is something that we are going to be facing in the not too distant future. You know, people may call it a variant, that it's a whole nother thing coming down the line, you know, and keep it in that whole framework of virology. People may say it's pathogenic priming, on the other hand, that it's, oh, you receive this vaccine, and so now you're vulnerable to exposure to another virus, which is going to amplify your immune response, which will ultimately kill you based on the studies. What I think is coming our way is that, you know, potentially as early as this fall, you know, October is honestly what I would guess, is that there will be an attempt to change the frequency that's being emitted to something far more intense, something that will ultimately end in the death of a lot of people.
Yep.
And I say this, I mean, one, I don't know that for sure, right? I'm guessing, right? But I say it because I also think this is the direction in which this energy is taking the human species. Like this is the seriousness of the moment. Right? Is there reason for a whole lot of optimism and hope? Oh yeah, you know. And it's going to be difficult. It's going to be intense, and it's going to require discipline. And so that's there is an excitement about all of this in a sense. There's also a heaviness about it all. This is, I'm telling you, my own personal experience. I do feel a sense of excitement. I feel a sense of heaviness. I feel a sense of seriousness. There are times when I tremble, you know, sort of thinking, am I really ready? I have 4 children, you know, am I really ready to do the work that it's gonna take to bring them into an adulthood where they are still fully human and bathed in light? Am I capable of that? Am I ready for that? Because I think it's going to get far more and more intense. You know, this isn't just about vaccines and masks anymore. This is about what it means to be human and to be connected to the divine. And that's what's at stake moving forward.
Yeah, I share your same perspective as to the likelihoods, probabilities going forward. And just to bring things into the context of potentially the plan for a moment, if you are going to emit a signal, probably from outside, that interacts with something you've injected into people, and that's going to do things, you're not going to, or do things that are very, you know, detrimental and scary, and we don't know what direction that will take. You're not going to flip on that switch. You're not going to turn that on until you've gotten as many people jabbed as you can. So, you know, we're not in that time yet. And I think, yeah, fall, winter, probably winter in my opinion, but who knows, is more likely to be when they start playing with their toys, so to speak, on that level. So it's again, very confirming for me. We share very, very similar views on where this stuff is going.
Yeah, a very sobering conversation, but also a lot of reason for optimism. I think now would probably be a good time to wrap it up. So if people are looking to get in contact with you, or maybe, you know, even see you as a patient or whatever, how do they get in touch with you?
The best way at this point is just to email me directly. And so my email address is drjosh@hey.com. So that's drjosh@hey.com. drjosh@hey.com. Great. And just reach out to me. We can go from there.
Do you do consultations over the phone, or is it all in person?
Yeah, I mean, I can do over the computer, I can do over the phone. My preference is in person, because it's more human. Right. But it's, it's not always possible for everyone. So yeah, just reach out to me and I can be really flexible. We'll find a way to connect.
Great. So that's drjosh@hey.com. And yes, so thank you for a great conversation. It was fascinating on a lot of different levels, confirming in other ways, we've separately talked about very similar things, the split of civilization, there's a lot of stuff going on, so a lot of synchronicities there, and really appreciate you coming on the show, and love to have you back sometime soon, and hopefully give us an update on what you're seeing, what you're dealing with, in the people that you're seeing, and I think everyone would love to hear more. So with that, thanks again for joining us, and we will see you next time.